Hello, everyone, and welcome to my podcast, Body Justice. I started this podcast because I believe that all bodies are good bodies. All bodies are deserving, worthy, and all bodies are whole just as they are. In today's world, it's ever hard to embody this as our truth. My mission is to create a space to process body image, eating disorders, and relationships through a justice-oriented lens. I'm a licensed therapist in California and an eating disorder survivor myself. I know what it's like to be at war with myself and also to find peace again. Thank you for being here, and I look forward to being your host. Hey everyone, welcome back to Body Justice. We are on episode 49 and it is season 3. Today I am interviewing Danae Becks, who is a Navajo registered dietitian. She's doing amazing work for Indigenous communities in terms of redefining health. And we are going to talk about the impacts of colonization. We're going to talk about concepts like land and body sovereignty, which I do not hear talked about at all, pretty much, in the eating disorder world. And these things absolutely have an impact on the way that we relate to our bodies and food. So I'm really excited to have her on. She's doing just incredible educational work in the community. So stay tuned to see how you can find her. She's on Instagram doing education as well. And before we get into the episode, just a reminder that you can find me on Instagram at bodyjustice.therapist. You can also visit my private practice website, www.eatingdisorderocdtherapy.com. If you or someone you know is looking for support in terms of therapy or recovery coaching, you can check out me and my awesome clinicians on my website. We treat a variety of things, but we do specialize in eating disorders, body image, anxiety, trauma, OCD. We also work with things like social justice issues, experiences of oppression, first gen and immigration issues, maternal mental health. So we definitely work with a variety of different things. So check us out, and I'll put all this info in the show notes. On my website, we also have courses for recovery. We have a blog. So there's also other types of resources if you cannot access therapy at this time. So without further ado, let's get started. All right, Danae. So I'm so excited to have you on Body Justice. I was wondering if we could just start with you sharing a little bit about yourself, how you identify, and what you're passionate about.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. My name is Danae Becks. I am a Navajo dietitian, and I work primarily with Native communities. I've been working in Native communities for about the past 10 years. And I like to talk about all things traditional food, Native food, and how do we incorporate it into our diet. And I also come at it from more of an inclusive approach. So I enjoy my work, definitely keeps me on my toes, but that's kind of where I'm coming from. I'm a registered dietitian, and I'm also a certified diabetes care and education specialist with a background in public health. I have my master's in public health too, and I focus on community health education. So that's a little bit about me, but I'm very happy to be here, and I'm very excited to talk about things that I'm passionate about.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I think the work you're doing, like we talked about, is just so needed and incredible. And I think what stood out to me when I came across your Instagram account was like how passionate you are about this. Like it's so apparent that this is so important to you. So I want to hear just like, how do you feel in terms of being a Navajo like dietitian? How is that different than maybe like the white mainstream dietetics field?
Well, I think what's often missing when we talk about nutrition or healthier eating or dietetics in Native communities, what's happened a lot is that our side of nutrition and dietetics kind of gets sideswiped, or it kind of gets forgotten or pushed aside. In terms of like dietetics, you know, as when we were taught as dietitians, going to college, we were taught, you know, very Eurocentric version of what it means to be quote unquote healthy. So things like, you know, trying to force our patients to eat like the Mediterranean diet or the DASH diet or, my plate, when a lot of our communities are just really, you know, struggling to meet our basic needs. And I think that's something that definitely isn't addressed, in Native communities. The mainstream messaging for Native communities is, you know, eat the rainbow, cut out fats, just grill your foods, eat only fresh foods. And it's like a lot of those things aren't attainable for many of our community members, and they're struggling. And I don't think we're addressing that as much as we need to. You know, I think it's very disingenuous to tell our community to only eat a certain way, or only one version of a diet is healthy for our community. And if you're not doing that, then you're doing it wrong. And especially considering we do have a long history of diabetes, people who live in larger bodies. And I think it's just created a whole issue of trying to enforce or reinforce these diet culture messages. And honestly, I really haven't met many other Native or Navajo or Indigenous dietitians who kind of come from this anti-diet space, and not realizing that the current mainstream messaging is harming our people. It's making our people not feel seen. And how are we going to help our people become healthier if we're not seeing them for their actual situation? Tangent there, but
hey.
That's kind of where I come from, is just recognizing that I think it's important to help our community eat healthier or eat more nourishing foods, but at the same time, I think it's equally important to recognize our heritage and our history that we have with food. And a lot of it is also recognizing how was the federal government involved in creating the situation, essentially. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had 500 years of colonization and 500 years of just, you know, not being allowed to celebrate our heritage, which includes our food. So that's kind of my passion, is just talking about that and recognizing that and seeing our community. And that's kind of the work I do out here. Right now, I don't live on the reservation, but I was born and raised on the Navajo Reservation, which is located in like mostly Arizona, but a little bit into New Mexico and Utah. But I grew up like smack dab in the middle of the res, a little town called Chinle, Arizona. Yay, go Willie the Wildcats. And I went to school, you know, from kindergarten to high school, graduated from there. And I moved off the reservation to go to college and to get my registration status. And now I'm back. And I've been working on the res for the past 5 years as a dietitian, as a clinical dietitian, but recently just quit my job to pursue my full-time business, or my business full-time. So very excited for this transition, and very excited to kind of support tribal organizations in a more inclusive approach.
Yeah, do the work that you want to do, because I feel like, kind of as I'm hearing you talk, two things really stand out to me. One is like how mainstream, like white dietetics, is part of colonization, right? So like what they are suggesting is quote unquote healthy doesn't account for systemic inequities or social determinants of health or other things that are just not meeting the Indigenous community where you're at. Because it's not realistic, like you said, to have this like Mediterranean diet or whatever the recommendation is when you're living in a food desert, or when, yeah, you don't have access to fresh vegetables and food, or you're so under-resourced because of colonization that you can't afford to have like fresh cooked meals. And
Right.
there's so much that goes into that. And then I'm also thinking of like how you mentioned there are, other native dietitians that kind of operate from this mainstream lens. And that makes me so sad. It makes me sad that colonization is like so insidious that people don't even realize that they're operating from sort of this dominant lens and sort of abandoning themselves.
Yeah, and I mean that's not to fault them. It's
Right,
just
no.
that, it's just the way our education system is set up with dietetics. Very Eurocentric version of nutrition and dietetics. And yeah, we have that one semester of cultural food, but I think there needs to be more work in throughout each of the courses that incorporates like more of an inclusive approach, more of like recognizing, oh, these lab values may be due to bias, or the BMI may be due to, not a very well informed study of body physiology. So,
Only the BMI is like not still being taught in dietetic school.
From what I understand, it is. So I graduated from Arizona State University back in 2011 with my bachelor's in nutrition. So that was like a full 12 years ago. So it may not be, but from what I understand, it still is. So, and I didn't actually become a registered dietitian until 2018. So I had a really long break because I wasn't even sure if I wanted to be a dietitian in the first place. After I graduated, I was like, no, I don't want to do that. That sounds
Yeah.
horrible. And I think part of that was just because of my own experience with that Eurocentric view of nutrition. I was like, I don't want to be part of that. I don't want to be part of telling my community to eat a certain diet when I know, like, deep down that this just doesn't work for us.
Right.
But eventually, I found my own way of addressing that, and my own way of talking about nutrition that seems to be resonating with my community, and not just my community, but also like non-native communities. So, that's kind of where the Instagram comes into place, is just talking about things that I'm passionate about and talking about our community in a way that's a little bit more inclusive of our food.
Yeah, you're changing the narrative. And yeah, it's absolutely not to blame on any individual native person, right? It's literally like a product of white supremacy. And also I think like we were talking about before we started recording, like there's a safety element too. It could feel unsafe to counter the dominant narrative.
Right. For sure, for sure. In many Native communities, it's a cultural value to be a little bit more humble and to not want to kind of disturb the peace, or disturb what's generally accepted. And so definitely it is a version of just wanting to feel safe and be safe. And even though when I do have, side conversations with native dietitians about how we need to incorporate more native foods, they still kind of perpetuate this more Eurocentric version of health, in the clinics, in the hospitals, and in the public health setting. And definitely I can see how it's safe. And I did that for a time and it was safe, but it always felt like it was against my own values. And I just didn't feel good preaching the same thing. And over time I started to change my own narrative. And sometimes it still doesn't feel safe when I'm on Instagram. I just had a post over the weekend where that one kind of went insane. I'm not sure if you saw that one
I don't know.
that one was about why I, as a Navajo dietitian, don't force people to become vegan.
I think I did see that. Yeah.
That one was very that was a very unsafe post. And it did, I think I could say that went viral. not to toot my own horn, but I also got a lot of very, I got like 700 or 600 new followers just from that one reel.
Dang.
But I also got a lot of like very inflammatory language from the vegan side, and very like disturbing language from people who don't know my community, who don't know my history, who, you know, were calling me all sorts of names.
Yeah, I didn't read the comments.
Yeah.
Oh my
I
gosh.
That's what I'm learning now is to just read comments up to a point. And I'm still getting DMs about it from the other side, and so like, but this, you know, I've waited about a year to post that because I knew how inflammatory it was going to be. But at the end of the day, I was telling another dietitian, like at the end of the day, it had to be done. It had to be said, because there's been this really strong like plant-based movement in Native communities. And now it's getting to the point where like community members are feeling shamed for not having access to quote unquote vegan or plant-based foods. And I had a presentation a few weeks ago where, you know, I was talking to people with very low resources, people who were just trying to get their GEDs and take care of their 5 kids. And I was working with one of our tribal programs and doing this presentation. And I asked, like, what does it mean to help be healthy? Because that's what I usually talk about, is like, how can we redefine health? And one of them was like, isn't it you just eat vegan food? And I'm just like, oh my gosh, you just have Snap and WIC like to lean back on, and you feel this pressure to be vegan now. And it's honestly getting annoying.
Yeah.
that people keep pushing this narrative, even though like our way of life wasn't built on being vegan. Like indigenous communities are innately not vegan.
Yeah.
They call us hunter gatherers for a reason. What do we hunt?
Why is that being pushed in Native communities?
I think a lot of people are just kind of falling into that diet culture mentality.
Yeah.
Thinking that if this one certain diet is going to be the key to end all health issues, when we know that's not the case, when no diet works, because everybody's different. And some of our leaders have kind of fallen into that space, and nobody's there to correct them.
Mm-hmm.
Or nobody's there to say, like, look, this is like scientifically backed. The evidence shows that these diets don't work. I mean, it's a preference for sure. I mean, I support it when people do want to go vegan or they want to go vegetarian. Like, I support you and I support your journey. If you feel like that's what's going to help you be healthy, then okay, great. But, you know, don't think this is going to be the end all be all to everything that is plaguing our communities. You know, and becoming vegan or becoming keto or doing all these other diets, it's not going to solve racism. It's not going to solve our lack of electricity. It's not going to solve our lack of plumbing.
Right.
And more plumbing, because in my community, in the Navajo Nation, 1/3 of residents who live on the reservation do not have electricity or indoor plumbing. 1/3. And there's about, on my reservation, which is the size of West Virginia, there's about 250,000 people living on the res, and we call it the res for short. 1/3 of them don't have electricity or running water. So it's just like, we're just barely trying to meet our basic needs, which is water and a place to live. And we have, you know, a mental health crisis. You know, Native youth are like I think, 2 times more likely to try to commit suicide. And we have all these other health disparities, you know, higher rates of alcohol dependency and substance use dependency. And so it's like, you know, I'm not going to go tell somebody who doesn't have electricity and somebody who's a, you know, who struggles with alcohol dependency to go eat vegan.
Right.
Like, no way. Is that not going to work?
No, that's not going to solve the underlying traumas that are leading to someone to abuse substances.
Like, right. Right. It's like, no, we have mental health issues. That's why, you know, we have very high rates of these disorders. Right. So that's, I think it wasn't until about a few years ago when I read the intuitive eating book, I was like, oh my gosh, there's another way of thinking about nutrition. Mm-hmm. And it really was freeing. And I just kind of want to help my fellow natives to understand, like, you're not doing it wrong. Like, this isn't your fault. Like, all of these issues, all of these health issues aren't your fault. Yeah. And so that's kind of been my mission for the past 2 years. And recently I've gone a little bit more hard on it because I quit my clinical job. And now I'm here doing it full time, and I've been getting a lot of really good feedback from my fellow natives. And I'm happy to spread the word because they're just like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that, you know, there were other options to talk about food or to think about food or how we need to change our relationship with food. That matters more than, you know, choosing celery all the time or whatever. I don't know.
Yes.
Or,
for sure.
So that's kind of what my work entails. So very happy to be in the place. I feel very privileged to be in this place, and to bring this message to our Native communities, because it's, you know, I love my community and I want to see them thrive, and this is the way I help them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And help myself in the process too.
Yes. It's like, you know, I can relate in other ways, not in the exact same way, but when we unlearn all these like systems that have influenced us and made us feel less than and oppressed, and it's almost like we get a chance to come home to ourselves, like to kind of reclaim our culture, ourselves, and
right.
It's a beautiful healing thing. It's so much more than changing what you eat. So I'm curious, right. Like, when you have those talks with your community, how do you help them redefine health? Like, what is your definition of health?
So when I talk with people about, like, in a group setting, first I ask, like, what do you think healthy is? Just to kind of get a baseline of where everybody's at. When they give me all their answers about what they think health is, which usually involves like, oh, you have to be skinny, or oh, you have to run a marathon, you know, those kind of versions. I kind of bring up the fact that health is different things to everybody. Yeah. And I can't tell you what the perfect healthy person is, because that's up to you. And that's something I bring up, is like, getting back in tune with our own version of health, because my version of healthy won't be the same as, you know, another person's version of healthy, and everybody's different, and it's okay to be in different parts of your journey, and having that acceptance and that compassion for yourself, and also having a healthy relationship with your body and with food. And so, at least like my textbook version of health, I kind of get into it, but you know, health has many different factors. It's not just your relationship with food, but also what is your access like? How close is a grocery store? Do you have electricity or running water? can you afford certain, foods? So can you do what you need to do in a way that feels good to you? Like, are you strong enough to take care of daily tasks? Are you energized enough to take care of daily tasks? Do you feel good about doing it? Are you getting enough sleep? So those are all, it's all different for everybody.
Yes.
And
there's no one size fits all when it comes to health.
Right. There's no one size fits all. And like on the res, like many other Native community or many other communities, the conventional thought is, oh, we have to be a BMI of less than 25 in order to be quote unquote healthy. And then that's all that matters. It doesn't matter if you have a dysfunctional relationship with food. It doesn't matter if you are suicidal. It doesn't matter if you've got all these other things going on. As long as you're under that BMI of 25, then you are good. And that's something I got really frustrated with in the clinical setting, because we did have a lot of providers, both non-Native and Native, saying that exact same thing, where I would get referrals for high triglyceride levels in somebody, and I talk with them and come to find out they have alcohol use disorder and they are suicidal, and I'm like, what am I gonna do about this?
Yeah.
Dietitian wise, what am I gonna do about this? And so it was very frustrating. And that's why I'm privileged to be in this place now, because I get to talk about what I'm passionate most, and not feel like I have to keep, the same face that the hospital wants me to keep.
Yeah.
So a lot of this has been more of unmasking for me. And it's like, these are actually my true feelings about all of these situations.
Right. And it's so vulnerable. It's because it's so personal, right? It's like, I can see your heart is so into this, and just seeing you like tear up talking about some of this stuff, or it looked like you were on the verge of tears.
Yeah, yeah, I was. So I've been interviewed for like maybe 4 or 5 other podcasts, and I guarantee you every single one I end up tearing up about the harm and trauma that my community has been through.
Yes.
And here I go again tearing up. It's important, and that's if I've learned anything about trauma-informed care, it's about seeing people, it's about recognizing people, it's about supporting one another, it's about empowering not just our community, but also ourselves. Mm-hmm. And it's also about building that trust, and I feel like being very vulnerable is part of building that trust. And that's why I choose to be vulnerable on my Instagram and in public settings, because this is a choice, and we know that having that choice is what helps you heal your trauma.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense. So yeah. But this is more about a journey about myself and my community, just as much as it is about helping my own community heal. And definitely I'm not like the savior or anything, but if I can just start the conversation, like that's important to me. And if it helps people being seen, feeling seen, then that's important to me.
Right. Yeah, we heal in community and connection. And so like you spreading this knowledge and this different view for people and showing your vulnerability around it, I'm sure helps other people feel safe to sort of unpack and explore for themselves and come together, have a space where you're not alone in these feelings.
Right.
I think that's so important. And we talked a little bit about it, but are there any other, common food and body struggles that show up when working with Indigenous communities?
There is practically no research on like, I guess you would call it dysfunctional eating issues in Native communities. I've tried searching the internet for it on Google. Maybe there's like some, hidden academic journal that I don't have access to you, but I haven't seen anything
Like
about,
disordered eating, you mean? Like,
disordered eating stuff about in Indigenous communities. A lot of the current academic journals about health in Native communities is really focused on diabetes or quote unquote obesity. And because we know that people who have diabetes or people who live in larger bodies are more at risk for developing eating disorders or dysfunctional eating patterns. It's not too far to say that our communities probably have higher rates, because on the res and in Native communities, the thing you hear is portion control, portion control, portion control, everything in moderation, stop eating your cultural foods, limit this, limit that. You're not healthy unless you are in a smaller body size. You're not safe unless you're in a smaller body size. And all of that messaging, I feel like it's just compounded and nobody has anywhere to turn. I've counseled so many people who have diabetes or live in larger body sizes. They've been dieting the whole time they've been living. For decades and decades, and they can't change their body size for whatever reason. Like, I see people who've been working out for 3 hours a day for years, and not recognizing there's a lot of other reasons why, they can't change their body size. It's because of the stress, the intergenerational trauma, the historical trauma. It's the lack of access to fruits and vegetables. It's the fact that they're only sleeping 3 hours a night, because they have to care for their elderly parents or their, like seven grandkids, so it's very complicated. And for me, at least, like, I don't, for me, when I, when I, for me, it's hard because as a dietitian, I always want to fall back on what does the evidence say? What does the research say? But for me, it's hard because it's like, well, there is no evidence or research in Native communities. So what am I supposed to do? And how am I supposed to back this up? Especially when I'm talking to medical providers and people who aren't familiar with our community. What evidence am I supposed to give to them? And it's not enough to say my lived experiences count, working on the, or growing up on the res. And growing up in the Indian Health Service system, there just isn't data for me to fall back on. And so it's definitely interesting, but I tell people, like, somebody's got to do it, so I might as well do it. I would rather just be, counseling my patients and let somebody else handle it. Like, that's just me. I want to be at home and just hang out with my dogs. But it's just gotten to the point where I'm just frustrated all the time when I go to health events in our communities. And not to say, like, they aren't, they don't know anything or they aren't hardworking. Like, they are. There's many health providers or healthcare professionals who are trying their best to help our community, but just this mainstream messaging has just really gotten a hold on some of our people.
Totally. And it kills me because, like, regardless of the social factors that could be contributing to someone's weight, it's also like body diversity has been around forever, and people in larger bodies have existed forever. So, why are we trying to make people into this, like, one body ideal that's never just been the existence of all people. And same with health. Like, yeah, of course, a lot of people want to work towards health, but it doesn't make you any better or worse as a
Right.
person, depending on your health status. And also, some people will never be quote unquote healthy because we're just born with
Right.
certain, you know, health issues. And also just being a human, like we're going to all get sick from time to time.
Right. Right. And having that perfectionist attitudes, like, you know, everything needs to be great. If it isn't, then it's all your fault.
Yeah.
And that's just what's definitely frustrating for me is like, not accepting people for who they are and where they're at and just supporting them in their current journey. And it doesn't matter what it looks like. I mean, and just recognizing that people are worthy of love and compassion, no matter what they look like, no matter their health status.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. And that, and for me, at least when I was doing one-on-one counseling, but now when I do group stuff, that's something I like to highlight is like people are worthy of love and compassionate care, no matter what you look like.
Yeah.
And so that's definitely something that, you know, the mainstream messaging definitely isn't there with that.
And it's purposeful. It's like, if I can make you feel bad about your body and your health status, well, then you're going to buy into this product, right? This
right.
diet or whatever, this messaging. And, you know, the diet and wellness industry profits off of that. So it's also tricky to help people kind of see that, you know, in a sense, we're all being brainwashed by this dominant
Yeah.
narrative. And it's designed to make you feel inadequate.
Right. Right. And yeah, definitely I hate to use the word colonist mindset just because I feel like it's so overused and just like the word health.
Yeah.
Colonization has its own definition for everybody.
It's
very, very personal. Definitely everybody has a different definition of that word, but it's just like letting go of that perfectionist ideology that we have here. And it applies the same with Native communities. Like, we aren't ever going to achieve that perfect status that everybody wants us to achieve. When I mean everybody, I mean the rest of America, because they look at us Natives and they say, oh, those poor Natives are, they have diabetes. They all have diabetes and they're all fat and they all don't have electricity and whatever. And then that's it. And people go about their day and don't give a second thought about it. And it's like, do you not understand that there are systems, there are all of these systems that are set up to fail us.
Yep.
Like, it goes back to our treaties. It goes back to all of these quote unquote assistance programs that were provided to us. And for sure, recently, there's been more of a movement towards self-determination for tribes. But I also want to say, like, well, we can be self-determinant about our own bodies and about our own health. So it's not just about, you know, tribes as a whole going towards self-determination. It's about self-determinations for our own bodies. And the phrase self-determination is like a federal definition, like allowing tribes to do what is best for their own communities. Whereas in the past, in Native history, it was always the federal government deciding what was best for us, quote unquote best for us. And now we're in this era called the self-determination era, in which we're deciding what works for us. So I feel like it's the same thing as, well, we can decide what's best for our own bodies too.
Is that then how you would define like land and body sovereignty?
You know, I don't think I've ever thought about connecting the two. until you reached out to me, and I was like, that is something to go on.
I would love to hear
I guess
your
I can see there is some connection for that. And for sure, I can say body sovereignty. And I talk to people about this in sessions. It's like, you're the only one that can determine what is best for you. I'm just here to support you. I'm here to give you information. If you ask me for advice, or if you ask me for information on this particular area, then I'll give it to you, and I'll give you the options, because that's also part of trauma-informed care, is making sure you're giving options to people to choose what makes them feel healthy. And that's a huge part of trauma healing, is having that choice. And I don't know where I was going with that, but I can definitely see there is a bridge between body sovereignty and land sovereignty. We definitely haven't achieved that land sovereignty goal, just like we haven't really achieved that body sovereignty dream. But with land sovereignty, that is a hard subject that we could go on for longer than this. And definitely I'm not the expert in land sovereignty. There are so many other Native scholars who are so well versed in land sovereignty, but I can say that, there is a link, and both are important to our healing.
Again, as I'm hearing you talk, I'm reflecting and I'm thinking, like, you know, with the government being like, oh yeah, like, let's empower Native people to take their land back and have body sovereignty. It's almost like a slap in the face, because it's like, okay, after all these years of colonization, and obviously it's still happening, it's like, we're going to tell you you're free, but not give you any of the tools.
Right.
Or the resources.
Not give us any access to, or not make it equitable access, I should say. There is attempts to increase access. Like, for instance, I was listening to a presentation the other day about water rights. It was actually a section on NPR about water rights, and how now that we're in a drought, so I'm in the Southwest. And we're in a drought, and definitely this past year we've gotten a lot more moisture, which is helping us get out of the drought. But there's always the issue of, like, water rights when it comes to Native communities, because in the Southwest there's a lot more tribes here in the Southwest than on, like, the East Coast, for obvious reasons. And the session was saying, like, with tribes, we have, and I could be wrong, definitely I could be wrong, but but we have a lot of water rights. It's just that we don't have equitable ways to access it. We don't have the resources or the funding to access it. Right. We do have those water rights, but it's just that we just don't have the tools to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Which is that was the first time I heard that, and I was just, like, mind blown. Mm-hmm. I'd like to go read up a little bit more on that. But for me, I'm always in a process of learning. So that's kind of like my next stage. But yeah, there's so many other Native scholars who definitely know about a lot more about land and water rights than I do. And I think that's just really cool, because for a long time, the federal government or white people told us how to be, and told us how to be healthy, and told us how to run our own tribes, and told us how to use the land. And now it's great that we're all, I mean, I think it's so inspiring to see all these other Native scholars or Native professionals kind of starting to take back that narrative of, how do we become more our own version of sovereign?
Mm-hmm.
And I think definitely body sovereignty is an important discussion that we're not talking about enough.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's, Even if we think about equality, right? Like you're saying with the water rights, equality is one thing, but what about reparations and all these centuries where, Native people have been stripped of body and land sovereignty? Like, you can't just say, okay, now you're free.
Yeah.
The
Yeah,
damage is
we
done.
took everything from your land. Now you can have it back.
Right. That's not how it works.
We contaminated all your waters, but here you go. Here,
Yeah.
go and be healthy now. And it's like, with natives, all we can do is laugh at the situation because that's really the only way we can handle that because that's how we've been handling it, is having that native humor and seeing the irony of things. Because what else can you do, And so, yeah, it's definitely a complicated subject. And it's, I'm still learning about it, and I'm still trying to piece it together in my own mind so I can talk about it in a more cohesive way for other people. But I think it's important to at least just start that conversation about it and just point out, like, hey, look, you think we all have diabetes and we're all living in larger bodies, and it's because it's all our fault because we chose, quote unquote, to be this way. And it's like, no, we're combating 500 years of all these issues of not allowing us to be healthy in our own versions. And sometimes in my presentations, I talk about that. It's like, we define our own version of health. We decide, not your doctor, not your dietitian, not your diabetes educator. It's you. It's so, and we need to get back to listening to our inner people, our inner selves, and choosing what makes us feel good.
Yeah, coming back to that cultural wisdom. And yeah, I'm being mindful of time because I know that you had to hop off, but I think we should make a part two because there's so much more we didn't get to because there's
Oh, yes.
topic.
Yes, I could keep going on about this. And definitely, if you have a chance to listen to my other podcasts, interviews, I go into some of these topics a little bit more, but all I can do is just talk about these issues, because it's important to not just me, but my community too.
Yeah, thanks for doing this with us, Danae. And please tell listeners how they can find you and hear more about your work.
Yeah, so I have my website is tumbleweednutrition.com, and most of my content is on Instagram. That's where I'm most active. I'm at tumbleweed_nutrition. So that's where you can find me. I'm also sometimes on LinkedIn, but I'm not very good at that
I'm not either.
one.
I'm like, this is too professional for me.
Yeah, it is. I'm like, where's all the pretty music and the reels
Yeah,
and the
it feels too
acting goofy?
yeah, it's too performative to me, but
Yeah.
I'm so grateful for your work and that we got to connect today. And yeah, we'll have to be in touch about maybe doing a part two if you have the capacity, because I want to give your voice in your community justice, the justice it deserves to uplift these conversations. So
Yeah, thank you so much, Kat, for having me on. I really enjoy talking about these things I'm passionate about. It never gets old for me.
absolutely. All right, Danae, well, I hope you have a good day and we'll be in touch.
Thank you.
All right.